A bundle of trouble for Microsoft.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. When it comes to antitrust cases, the software maker doesn't have a very good track record. Chalk up another loss. Today, South Korea's Fair Trade Commission fined Microsoft $32 million and ordered the company to separate its instant messaging service from Windows. Microsoft will appeal, as it's doing in a similar bundling case in Europe. Chairman Bill Gates got the news in India, where he's working on other things. Today, he announced a $1.7 billion investment in India. Gates thinks in the billions, and his philanthropy makes a difference. But sometimes all it takes is a few bucks to help somebody make it. The United Nations proclaimed 2005 the year of microcredit. Today, the UN gets a report on how this small-scale lending is doing. Marketplace's Ethan Lindsay reports.
Carmen Velasco runs ProMujer, a Bolivian lender. Her group gives tiny loans, sometimes as little as 50 bucks, to Bolivia's poor.
It's more than giving them money. It's that we believe in them. They discover that they have a value.
Velasco works with the Microcredit Summit Campaign, a group that acts as something of an accountant for microlenders like hers. Sam Daly Harris directs that nonprofit. He says some interesting pieces of info are contained in today's report.
Women tend to be better clients, and they pay back better than when it went in through the man. He might spend a little extra money taking his friends to the movies or on liquor or whatever.
Daly Harris says 55 million women received microloans last year, and he says 3% of them moved out of poverty because of that money. I'm Ethan Lindsay for Marketplace.
So how's that mortgage loan coming? A lot of people are nervous about the housing market, but let me tell you, the signs are all pointing in one direction, a slowdown in 2006. A report today from UCLA's Anderson Forecast predicts just that. It says while the cooling off will take some steam and jobs out of the economy, it won't be enough to cause a full-blown recession. Americans might soon be able to own stock in the New York Stock Exchange. Yesterday, its members approved a plan to go public and merge with electronic trading firm Archipelago. Here's Bob Moon.
The Justice Department has already cleared the merger. Now the NYSE's plan to join forces in a for-profit publicly traded company needs approval from the Securities and Exchange Commission. Wall Street historian Charles Geis sees no big hurdles since the NYSE doesn't have a lock on trading.
I think it'd be nicer to see competition, but then again, if NYSE is a 900-pound gorilla, then the 700-pound gorilla is NASDAQ right behind them.
The NYSE is aiming to close the deal by the end of next month and start selling shares of itself, although Geis says it might be tough to buy the stock.
Members of the individual public are probably not going to see much of those shares. They're going to be far gone before they're actually handed out to the retail distribution network. You're going to have to be a very good customer of a brokerage firm in order to see a New York Stock Exchange share.
As for the likely price of the stock, Geist expects it'll be pricey. In New York, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
A late-day sell-off killed what could have been a bigger day on Wall Street. The Dow closed up 21 points to 10,856. The S&P 500 climbed a point and a half to 1,263. The NASDAQ ended the day 3 points higher at 2,260. You're listening to Marketplace. The U.S. Postal Service is back in the black. It ended the fiscal year with a net income of nearly $1.5 billion. But that doesn't mean you'll get a break on the cost of mailing a letter. Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
Neither email nor UPS nor the snail mail stigma has stemmed the amount of letters handled by U.S. mail carriers. The Postal Service pulled in record revenues of $70 billion this year, thanks to record volume. Much of that boost came from junk mail, as more businesses aimed for consumer mailboxes. Postal Service CFO Richard Strasser.
There's been a tremendous reception for the value of mail as a customer relationship management medium.
But the extra money won't stop the upcoming postage hike. Congress is requiring the Postal Service to put about $3 billion into a kind of rainy day fund. Legislation to change that is stalled on the Hill. So next month, expect the 39-cent stamp at a post office near you. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Which is produced by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reuters. The facts, without spin, as they happen. Reuters helps you stay in the know now. And by Toyota, designing vehicles with hybrid synergy drive for fuel efficiency and low emissions. More at toyota.com. Toyota, moving forward.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. Right now, the House and Senate are working on tax-cutting bills, but there's a huge difference between the two. The House version would extend for 2 years tax cuts on stock dividends and capital gains, but it doesn't touch what's called the alternative minimum tax. The Senate bill gives temporary relief from the AMT, but doesn't extend those other cuts. So which version will prevail? Commentator Robert Reich shares his thoughts.
No legislative choice in recent years has so clearly pitted the super rich against the suburban middle class. Most of the benefits of the House's proposed extension of the dividend and capital gains tax cuts would go to the top 1% of taxpayers with average annual incomes of over $1 million. Most of the benefits of the Senate's cut in the alternative minimum tax would go to households earning between $75,000 and $100,000 a year, who would otherwise get slammed. The alternative minimum tax, AMT for short, was enacted more than 3 decades ago to prevent the super rich from using tax breaks to avoid paying income taxes. But now the super rich are making out like bandits while the AMT is about to slam the middle class. That's because the AMT was never indexed to inflation, which means it's starting to hit taxpayers considerably below the super rich. This year, it reaches over 3 million middle-class taxpayers who will no longer be able to deduct state and local taxes or use the child tax credit. Next year, 10 million more. So unless the Senate version of the new tax bill prevails, middle-class taxes will rise, even as the Bush tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 continue to reduce taxes on the very wealthy. But here's where things get politically interesting. You see, both groups, the super rich and the upper middle class, have lots of political clout in Washington. So as these two tax bills move on a collision course, the multi-billion dollar question is, which group will win? The likely answer? Both. Here's betting the Senate and House will compromise by extending the dividend and capital gains tax cuts and also cutting the AMT, with the result that the budget deficit explodes. So who ends up paying for Iraq, the Katrina cleanup, the Medicare drug benefit, Homeland Security, everything else? Not the super rich, who will get their capital gains and dividend tax cuts extended, and not the middle class, who won't tolerate getting hit by the AMT. No, it will be the poor and near poor, because the only way Congress will be able to say it's tackling the exploding budget deficit will be to cut more programs for the poor, fewer food stamps, less Medicaid, vanishing housing assistance. But this won't be nearly enough to shrink the deficit. So to preserve the tax breaks for the rich and to avoid the AMT, we'll have to rely on foreigners, from whom we're already borrowing more than $2 billion a day. But of course, in the end, it will be our kids and grandkids who have to pay them back. And our current political leaders, they couldn't care less, because by then, they'll be long gone.
You can read more of Robert Reich's work at robertreich.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.
British scientists worry their homeland is...
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like...
What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.